Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burge, and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish a book. And I do the review, stick it up here on the podcast feed. Although this time out, there's been a big delay. We've taken like a month off, and we will talk about why. Now, joining me via Skype is my girlfriend, Juliana. Say hello.
Hello.
You can't wave. I can see you on the Skype window, but other people can't see that. So the reason why we're chatting on Skype is because we're spending a month apart. The reason why there's been such a long time since the last podcast and last time we've updated this feed is because we went on holiday to the European Juggling Convention and then for another week traveling around Ireland. And then I've been up at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. So if you're listening to this before the end of August, you can actually still see my show. It's at 4 o'clock, the Capital Bar in Cowgate. It's very good. It's been very successful. However, I was chatting to someone else the other day and I was like, I have not read so little in my life before because I don't have time to like read ebooks. And I was reading this as an ebook for a while. And also audiobooks, I'm just not... All the things that I would normally do when I listen to podcasts and listen to audiobooks, I just haven't been doing. I've not been going for runs because I'm just too tired. I've been doing lots of promotion and flyering and performing and then going to the other shows and all the stuff that I would normally do, like, you know, housework and washing up, all these other things, which, or when I'm on a cruise ship, sitting in a hot tub listening to audiobooks and doing all of that. I just haven't done any of that. But Juliana has been really...
It happens when you have a proper job, a daily proper job.
A real job. But it's more than just a real job. It's also doing lots of social stuff. Like I'm at the biggest arts festival in the world. It means just being here takes up time, you know, even for people who have it. But you've read lots of books, haven't you, since we did this?
A few.
You said you read 3 German science fiction novels since you finished this one.
But they were really quick and easy. Okay. It was like young adult books in the end.
Well, we'll talk about them some other time. So let's continue with this culture reading series. That's what we're doing here, isn't it? We got up to Surface Detail. We're not doing everything in order, but we had Surface Detail, Hydrogen Sonata, and Look to Windward still to go. The 3 books which I like to think of as the kind of the... I guess like the afterlife trilogy or the death and afterlife trilogy, because they both approach the afterlife or what happens when you die or what happens when a civilization dies or what happens when a ship dies and all that kind of stuff. It approaches these 3 kind of approach it in you know, 3 different ways from 3 different angles, which is why I thought it'd be fun to put them at the end. And so, yes, we're up to Surface Detail in German. It is called...
War of the Souls.
Yeah, War of the Souls.
Krieg der Seelen.
And you read the ebook version, didn't you? You read an ebook, German ebook version, yes.
Because the latest Ian and Banks books were translated again. They were translated ages ago, but then one of the Random House publishers decided to translate them again in a new way. And then also at the same time, they offer. Ebooks as well.
Yes, it was the first time. It was we had to wait for this one to come out because it was only in June or something that they came out, or May or June, that this book came out as an ebook, didn't it, in German?
Yes.
I started reading it as the English ebook. And I was reading, but it was taking me so long, like I said before, that in the end I was like, this is just, I'm just not going to get through this. Last time though, I listened to it as an audiobook, narrated by Peter Kenny, got it from Audible this time out, and yes, it's very good, and I thoroughly enjoyed it last time. It's one of my favourite. It's one of my favourite of the audiobooks of the culture. You know, I've listened to now most of them. Well, I think all except Accession. Now I've listened to as an audiobook I've read them both as an ebook or paperback and as an audiobook. Whereas this time I was going through, I was about halfway through, or like a third of the way through, and I was realising I'm just never going to get to the end of this ebook if I'm only reading it when I sit down and relax at night because I'm getting to bed between 2 and 5 and 8 o'clock in the morning each night. And I'm just not staying. I just wasn't getting through it. So I decided to download it again as an audiobook. And I listened to the second half as an audiobook and thoroughly enjoyed it. It is a really, really great performance. Peter Kenny does quite a lot of these books. So that's a lot of fun. So should we get into this? We've talked about these other ones.
Just one interruption. Can you still hear me?
Yeah, I'm here. You're fine.
Okay. Because my computer just crashed. Everything is frozen.
Okay, quick edit at that point for Juliana to sort her laptop out. So let's get into this. First of all, This is weird because normally as we're reading a book, we're like talking backwards and forwards about it and we're talking about this. But now we've not even seen each other for the last 2 weeks. More than 2 weeks? No, about 2 weeks now, isn't it? And we haven't really gone into this. This is really strange for us to talk about this book.
Today,
normally you're like, what was this ship called? Or what was that ship called? Oh, who, you know, you're asking me these different things. And I'm like, oh, like this.
Yeah. Thing. When we said, okay, let's do the podcast today, I looked back at the book and thought, well, this is super weird. We haven't talked about the book at all.
Yeah.
Because I read it and then you were behind and I finished quite a long while ago now.
Yeah.
And so I tried to go back into the book and remember what my feelings and my opinions were about it, but I think I can go back into it, no problem at all.
Yeah, okay.
Just maybe the names that will be a bit slippery.
I have the Wikipedia page open right here, and also the Wikipedia page list of spacecraft in Culture Series novels, which is also
Nice. This is very important in this book.
Yeah, there is a lot of ships. It's all about the ships again in this one. Did you enjoy this more or less than Matter, like the previous book? Is this a step up after Matter? What are you thinking?
I think it's quite different.
Different
from it's different. I'm not so sure if it's comparable.
Comparable? Yeah. Why?
Because there's this whole new idea in it.
Yeah, but wasn't that in the previous one in Matter? Matter was talking about what if reality, or what if something like virtual reality or something, like what if like virtual worlds are indistinguishable from reality? How do we know that we're in the real world? How do we know that our computing layer is matter rather than in a computer? You know, so that was a thing that they were talking about in Matter, and this is taking it a step forward. It just says, okay, let's say we're all in the real world. What happens when we actually have access to make people think that they are in the real world, you know? And that's what happens in the hells, you know, the people who are that's what the book is about, isn't it? You know, it's about putting people into hells so that are so real that they know it's real torment. They actually feel their torment is indistinguishable from real torment.
It is quite a horrible idea.
Yes.
For me.
The idea of hells, virtual hells.
The idea of not knowing if it's something is real or not. You know, when I first saw,
The Matrix you're talking about.
The Matrix.
Yeah.
Of course. Exactly. Yeah. When I watched that movie, I was disturbed for about a week.
I think everyone was. That's why everyone was like, oh man, it's so deep, it blows
maybe
your mind.
Yeah.
Man.
Shit. Maybe everything I see and feel and think is just not real. And how can I know? There's no way I can know. Except somebody gives me pills.
Yeah.
Maybe.
The red pill or the blue pill.
And so this is the very interesting thing of playing around with this idea of being in a reality in that you're in this virtual reality that make you your brain feel everything, and especially if it's something where you suffer. That's just horrible.
And that's what we're saying. This is taking a big step up. You know, it's taking what we had in the previous book in Matter and going, well, what could this be used for? If virtual reality worlds aren't just used for like gaming, you know, that's what one of the main characters in this is like, oh yes, Joyla Veppers. What's his name? Yeah, Veppers. Joyla Veppers is like, oh yes, I do this, and I made my family made their first wealth from making computer games and interactive games and stuff like that. Like, what happens when virtual worlds becomes more than just a distraction, or
this
more than
game.
Just a play area or a research area? It becomes hell. So they run in this book. It talks about the war in hell. No, the war for souls, isn't it? That it's called in German, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that actually fits quite well. I'm not so sure about the English title.
What, Surface Detail?
Yeah.
Okay, well, we can go into that later. But let's just go into it. So the book begins, a war game, the war in heaven.
Just one question. Ask you at some point why you've put this book at that. Because when I read this book, I thought, this is actually quite cool, because this is kind of an introduction in the culture as well.
Yeah.
you know?
Because... Yeah, but it's set so late in the world. It's set so late in the culture timeline. A lot of the others you can mix around because it doesn't really matter when they are, you know?
Yeah. But I was at the beginning, I was thinking, we get really well introduced into the whole idea of the culture and into the ships because the main character, Ledebrek, she has no idea about the culture and then she gets to learn about it.
Yes,
so
but we
it's
have
actually
that.
Quite
we have
a good
that
introduction for the reader as well. Mm. But then I finished it and then I knew why you put it there.
What do you mean? Why? But yes, we'll get into that spoiler stuff later.
Yeah, yes, exactly. The thing is, I wanted to put it a bit later.
Yeah, but if people want to have a non-spoiler, this is actually the second time I've done this one. I could probably look up here when I reviewed it. It was like probably 2011. I reviewed this book before, so you can go back and check out episode number 130. I'll have a look. So people can go back and check out the non-spoiler version. This is the read-along version. So when did I do this one? User weapons, surface detail. Episode 192. So people can go back and check out my review.
So if you really want it, because it's so difficult to talk about this book.
Yeah, without
especially
spoilers.
Especially after we read it, without spoilers.
And, yes, it has to go here. So let's get into this. There's the war happening it's called the War for Heaven or the War in Heaven. And the idea is that there's lots of civilizations, there's lots of societies, not the culture, but lots of others who say that everyone's brains are recorded. And when they die, their soul, their brain pattern is put into an artificial hell, virtual afterlives in which the mind states of the dead are tortured. And I'm never quite sure, like, who decides which of the mind states are tortured? You know, is it just criminals who get sent there, or is it anyone who wasn't, you know, good in their life? That's not really what's put into it. You know, that's not really, it doesn't really go into that in the book. But there are hells, and everyone thinks unending torture of the souls of the dead is very bad. Actually, not everyone does. The culture does, but lots of other people do as well. And
they're like two fractions, kind of.
Yeah.
They're the pro-hells and the anti-hell people, kind of. Isn't it? Isn't that the basic
That's
deal?
It. And there's the Pavulians, which they're these like kind of elephant-y kind of creatures, like two-trunk elephant creatures, like dog-sized. No, about cow-sized. I don't know how big they're meant to be. But they are there, and they have hells, and there's other places that have hells. But we actually follow Prin and Che at the beginning going through hell. So we actually read quite a lot of what hell is like from the first person, or like what it's like to experience that. And it is awful. It's some of the worst parts of the book to read, but also some of the most interesting parts of the book, because you don't really have that in modern science fiction. It's like, it comes out of some, you know, Dante's Inferno or something, but like
wrote that down.
Yeah.
I think that was a big influence in writing this book to him.
Yeah.
Because there are not so many books that describe torture in that kind of way.
No.
And also what about this book was it has so many layers.
Mm.
It has the layer of Ledger, and it has Prin and Che, and it has the soldier Vatue, and it has the other one. What's her surname?
What's who?
The culture agent.
Oh, Yaim and Sophie.
Yaim, exactly. So these are all the stories that take part.
Yeah,
pretty much all at the same at the same time.
Yeah, we follow them in different ways. Yeah,
exactly.
But it's not. This is more complex than most of his other or a lot of the other culture books.
Very,
it's like
very
Accession
complex.
In a way, because Accession, you've got these people over here and these people over here. But what I actually really like about this is I think the story in this is actually one of the stronger stories that you read. Like as you're reading it, you think, oh, okay, there's this person over here. Why is that person? Oh, is it just talking about death? Because it's so funny at the beginning of this. It's like we read the first chapter, the first section, and at the end of it, someone dies. Like the main character dies, and then the next one, that's Ledeja. And then we get the next person, it's Vatuel, and then he dies. And then the next person dies, and then the next person doesn't die. And you're like, wait, oh. And then the first person, we meet up with them again, and the next person, we meet up with them again in their respective afterlives.
And there are people coming back from death as well.
So
it's actually everyone is coming back, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty much. And that's what I really like about this, is that everybody has an afterlife. Some of them have an afterlife in hell. Some of them have an afterlife in, you know, in another computer game. You realize, oh, it was all a computer game. But it wasn't a computer game. It's another virtual reality system, which is being used
Actually,
not as a game.
Everyone comes back to reality in the end. There's nobody staying, or nobody has a second life in the virtual reality. They are all coming back.
They all brought back. No, that's not true. Che, is it Prin? I can never remember which one.
Che is the woman.
She's the one who stays there. At the end, she doesn't get a body. She actually goes and lives in a heaven afterlife. She goes.
Oh, yeah, right.
And she meets Prin again much later on. You know.
Oh yeah, that was what they said.
And
they meet again.
And also, Joy LaVeppers, who is our main bad guy, who is one of my favorite bad guys in the culture world. He doesn't get an afterlife.
But again,
it's one of those things. Let's just finish this. Of course, people are reading along with this. So they know the story. But the point is that there's a war in heaven, which isn't actually happening in heaven or in hell. It's in a well-controlled virtual realm with very strict rules. And they say, if the people who don't want hells win, we're going to get rid of the hells. And if the people who do want hells win, we're going to keep the hells. And it's like, yes, we will all abide by these rules. And then they're like, until it starts going wrong, and then we'll start cheating. And then if the cheating doesn't work well, we're going to bring the war out into the real. And I quite like the idea of these different layers of games. And I think it's so funny to see Ian M. Banks. He's obviously a really big game player. He likes games. This is it. You see it in the play of games and these other stories. You know, he's always inventing new games. Consider Phlebas, there's the Damage, which is some card game where people bet with real lives. You know, they actually have, you know, it's like, you've got 3 lives left. You say, yeah, and I bought these slaves and I'm going to kill them. Or these are the suicidal people. You know, they actually, those are the playing pieces are humans. And you see that a lot, of course, in Player of Games. But then in this, what's the other one? Yeah, in Inversions, we have this scene where the king and his son are playing the catapult game. And they're like, oh, yeah, we've got these islands and these pools and there's these fake villages and they're shooting catapults over at these islands and pools.
In this one, you just have the whole thing just on water in little boats.
Yeah, and here, Joy LaVeppers, who is our new rich king kind of figure, has got this game going on, this game, which is, again, it's not, the game doesn't mean anything at the beginning of the book in this location. And, you know, they're just sailing around and shooting at each other. And some people might get damaged, some people might not do that kind of stuff. But that's another one of these layers in this thing, is that starts off as a game that doesn't mean anything, but becomes the location of the final showdown between Ledeja and Joy LaVeppers and that whole thing. And he had all of his players, he had the weapons, he had it all set up there. But this game, which was just a game, suddenly comes into the real. It becomes real for him.
And it's a situation of life and death. It's not only it becomes real for him, it also is beforehand, he was just enjoying other people destroying each other.
Yeah.
And in the end, he is not able to destroy anyone else. He gets destroyed by it. Himself.
Yeah, of course. But then, because I actually made a note of this on my phone, I was saying, let me have a look here on my thing. I said, rich people playing war. And this actually comes down to this, all these different levels. We had that in Inversions, the rich people playing war and playing with people's lives. Well, not so much in that one, but also in Player of Games and in these other ones, you know, you have these games that are played at this high level, which then bleed over. And then I made a note that actually this is the way the culture ships. For them, war is fun. There's the main ship character falling outside the normal moral constraints. He's like going, this is so much fun. He's going to get into a battle and he's like, it's so much fun. And they're like, but people were on those ships. And they were like, yeah, but they signed up for it. They knew it was going to happen. And I understand now that, like, reading this book the second time, because I, you know, I knew what was going on when they were talking about the boat battles, you know, that whole boat battle place. And I was thinking, oh, okay, now I understand what's going on because I knew what was going to happen in that location. And I paid a bit more attention to it. And I was realizing that as I was going through, it's like, yes, the culture ships play at war. These very fast pickets that go around who are just waiting for stuff to go wrong. They're just waiting to get involved. They want to roll up the sleeves and everyone's going, oh man, you got to shoot up these other, what is it, the HFCF, no, GFCF. which is like this other, group of this other alien civilization who thought they were up at the level of the culture, and turned out they're not. And there's so much of this different level that it's exactly the same as Joy LaVepa's. He looks down at this fake battleground going on, just looking down from above and going, oh, well, they're people over here. We're going to cheat. We're going to put these people here. Like, he's cheating at the game. He has this overview and is cheating and is telling his guys what to do, or they know in advance, and there's all that kind of stuff. And you realize that's what the culture is doing to all of these other civilizations, all of these other level 7 civilizations, because they're up at level 8. They're looking down at this and going, hey, we are playing war games here. That's what we're doing. There's a smatter infection. Oh, well, we'll just go over here. It's a game. Even the people there are like going, woohoo, we don't have to be out here. The computers could do it. Even the humans are like, it's a lot more fun to play this. You know, all of war is a game.
Yeah, the humans actually go in there knowing that it doesn't matter if they die or not.
Yeah.
They just have fun shooting at
because
things.
They know they're backed up. They know that their brain will go off and they'll just get a new body. It might take a few weeks to get a new body and they'll miss out a few hours or days of experience, but they're all backed up. But then you get the whole view of it as well. The games actually do matter. Like I say, the War in Hell is a big computer game and everyone's coming in and playing a computer game, but this is a computer game that runs for 30 years and lasts a really long time. But again, the culture is kind of looking, not looking down at it, but like looking sideways at it. You know, the culture seems to have known right from the beginning that it didn't matter what happened in that computer game. Their side are probably going to win, you know. And it felt like that they were just kind of like the rest of the galaxy is trying to do their thing and is backing it up. All the level 7, 6, and 7 different societies and groups of aliens or whatever, they're all getting involved. But the culture is just like, yeah, you guys get on with it. It wouldn't be fair if we join in, you know.
That is always the thing. It wouldn't be fair, but in the end, they just do it.
But no, they don't just do it. That's the thing. They didn't actually have to do it. What they actually did at the end was like, we'll make a show of pretending not to be involved and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But anyway, that brings me back
to this. So that actually, this kind of who is on what side and who is doing what and why, that part was very confusing to me.
What, you didn't who was on what side of the wars or the war?
Until the very end, I did not know they had all these names, the guys that wanted the hells, and then there were the guys who kind of said they want the hell as well in the end, but they got together with somebody else too. They also didn't want the hell.
But the funniest thing is when Joy LaVepa's is there, and this is what I really enjoyed this section in the middle, when it was the first time you're like, oh, Joy LaVepa's is actually, he's more involved. Like, you thought he was just a bad guy, like a villain.
Yes.
But then he was like, oh, I'm going to do this thing. And they come up to him and say, look, if anyone comes to you and says they want your help, don't do it. And he's like, yeah, no problem. I won't. I'll do that. And then the next chapter, he's in a meeting and they're like, we want you to do this. And he's like, okay, I'll do that. And you're like, which side is he really playing?
Exactly. Yeah. I never understood what he was doing. And also I didn't understand at some point he was for the, he was the, in the Contra side. He was in the side against the hell. But then the guys that were against the hell actually turned out to be for the hell.
No, they weren't. The people who were against the hell were always against the hells. They were like, we're going to build all of these spaceships in this band here, around this planet, this belt of stuff, of all these, what do they call them? Fabricaries or whatever they call
them.
So it's like, okay, we're going to build all these ships and send them over and destroy the hells. They didn't know. They knew that Joy LaVepa's knew where the hells were, but they didn't know
where they were,
so it was up to him to allow them to use his factories, or he had access to some of these factory ships, because that's where a lot of his wealth comes from, these factory ships. So all of that was a diversion on the anti-hell side, the pro-heaven side, the anti-hell side. But then the pro-hell side, the people who want there to be hells, also thought they had Veppers on his side.
His side.
On their side. Yeah. They thought they were on his side. So that's what that's what I really like about it, because all the way up until the end, you're like, which side is Veppers on?
You're not quite sure. Yeah. And so this is the thing. I think I rated it 4 stars on Goodreads because there was this all the time, this Do I like that? Or yeah. Do I not like that?
But what I really liked about it is this time when they're like going, and then we'll do this and do this and this and this. And then the pro, the anti-hell side will win. And then they're like, you do know that we're the anti-hell side. And they're like, and he's like, yes, you're anti-hell. And that was the point where I was like, oh, these people on the anti-hell side, you know, and that's what I really liked about it, because people are having a long conversation about escalating the war to the other side, and they're all saying, well, us on our side, we're doing this. And that's the whole thing with Vatuel, the guy who dies over and over in the computer game and keeps coming back and works his way up. All the time he's saying, well, our side is losing and the other side is losing. And then you hear
I was never sure in what side
he was. Yeah, and that's the whole point.
He was supposed to be a traitor, and that makes everything even more complicated. Because then you think, oh, he's like double agent. So he fights on one side, and then he gets caught, and they say, oh, you're a traitor, so you work for the other side.
But that's the point. He actually was meant to be a traitor.
It turns out in the end that was his game.
Yeah, that his game was getting. And it even says at the very end he actually gets the epilogue, and he's back in his real body again, and he's no longer.
Yeah.
He's no longer. And he says. And this is where it all comes clear. He says he was actually a double agent, but he changed his mind because when he was actually in these places, he saw what hell was actually like. Being in the war in heaven, like the war in this virtual world, he understood what it would be like to be in hell, to constantly come back and to constantly be, killed and to be destroyed and things. And I really love that section that, at the end, he goes, oh, and actually, I was a traitor. Like, the culture, the people who said, hey, you're a traitor. It's like, yeah, they were right. You know, they were right all along. He was actually a traitor.
I really love this final sentence.
What, the table is ready for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it made them so much, this whole character there, this Jorni Vetuel.
Yeah.
He didn't make sense to me. I didn't know why was he there. Why did we have to go through his story?
Spend time with him.
In the very last sentence, everything clicked and said, ah.
Yeah.
Oh, but know this guy.
This is exactly what I thought when I read this book the first time. And we kept on going back. And he was like working his way up the ranks. He was working his way up the ranks. I was like, oh, this is like...
this is Lexicon.
I was thinking, this is very much like, is it Use of Weapons? Because, again, it's that same format. Because in that book, you have the culture stuff. But then you have the book told in reverse about him. You know, he fights in this castle and he does well. And then he fights in this place and he does well. And he works his way up. And then he's recruited into the culture. And then you see him working his way up through, like, into the, you know, in special circumstances, you know, and the things that he does there. And becomes more and more important and gets that legend about him. And he's directing whole armies. We see that. But then it's funny that in here we see that same happening again, but the time that I knew that it actually was a Kalwi, it didn't actually take that last line to tell me, because at one point it says quite near the end, he says, oh, and he was back in this body and he knew his name, or at least he knew the name that he thought he knew the name that he once considered himself, even though that wasn't his real name. And I was like, oh, this is a Kalwi. And then it gets to the end and I was like, yeah, it is a Kalwi. So again, that's I quite like that, because we actually just get a glimpse of what's going on there throughout that character, but we don't need his backstory. He doesn't have backstory. Every time he just wakes up and he's like, and now I'm a soldier, and now I'm an officer, and now I'm a commander, and now I'm a brigadier, and now I'm a general brigadier of the whole forces, and works his way
up. But the main point about him and being in that whole battle the whole time is that the culture is involved the whole time.
You think he's still a culture agent?
Of course.
I don't think so. I think he was a free agent.
No.
No, I think at the end of Use of Weapons, he goes off and does his own thing, and he's just floating around the sphere. He actually says, I don't want to start off. If I do this again, I'm not going to start off. I'm not going to insist on starting off at the bottom. I think what he does is he's been a mercenary, but the only way he says he'll get involved in any mercenary situation is if he goes in at the ground level and is just a privateer or just a whatever. Because he actually says, every time I've done this now, I've always insisted on starting off in the bottom and working my way up. That is his game. His game is taking over armies from the bottom just by how good he is at what his job is. And I actually really quite like that. It reminds me again of the Player of Games, Gurge from Player of Games. It's like, I will do this, but I will just go in and I'm going to learn everything from the bottom up. You know, I'm going to go in and take over. And in my culture fan fiction that I'd like to do. I'd love to have a I'd love to have a Zakalwi versus Gurge showdown, like in one of these virtual worlds or in a game board or something like that. Actually have Zakalwi in there as a commander on one side, and then the high level strategy kind of level on the other side of some kind of war in heaven or some virtual important decision. Actually have, you know, Zakalwi and Gurge on either side of that. I think that would be really that would be a fun bit of fan fiction to see that relationship or that thing play out against each other. So what true. I'm going to have a look but through some of my
one,
other
just one
notes
thing
here.
About the epilogue. Yeah. You know, he's sitting there in this cafe or in this restaurant, and he's waiting for someone.
Yeah,
he's waiting for the poet.
Yeah,
she was not culture.
The poet wasn't culture.
No.
Who is the poet? What was it about? She was later the usual. What was it about poets? Ah, I think I only listened to this the other day. I can't remember who the poet was meant to be.
No, I don't think the I think the poet was the woman he loved, and like he was on the beach and stuff.
Oh, okay.
Do you remember?
Yeah, but that was. I don't think so.
No, I'm
not sure about that. I can't remember who the poet must be. Maybe I should do a search across all culture books for poets and then cross-reference it.
I think it would be cool if you have like a chart where you have all the connections of all the characters that
between the books and when
between
it happens.
Books.
Yeah,
exactly. Yes. Also, what I really like in that book, is at the end how it conveals that the little drone was there all the time.
What in? Which little drone?
With
Oh yeah, the tattoo was a drone. That was her.
Yeah.
That was her thing to stop her.
Is that great?
Killing everything. But then the falling outside the normal moral constraints twists around the slap drone.
That was actually a really really fun twist.
Yeah. I like this dramatis personae at the end. It's like Ambassador Huon jumped. You know, before, did this kind of stuff. The falling outside. This one did this. I quite like those little things. Okay, let me go and have a look at some of these other notes that I made here. One thing that I didn't like about this is some of the pacing in the middle. The first third I thought was really good, and then there's this middle section, not very long, just a few chapters long, where it's suddenly like, and now we'll do the info dumping, and now this is what this is, and I was was just wasn't done as well in this book as it is in, say, is in Player of Games, where everything that you learn seems to be like integrated into the story rather than just, oh, for the rest of the story to make sense, we need to know all of this. Now let me tell you all stuff. And there was actually a character, what was her name? Yaimi Nunsoki, from the quieter section, which is a culture section that deals with the afterlives. And she doesn't have a neural lace. And she's like, okay, what's happening here? Well, said the ship, this is this and this is happening. And this is happening and this is happening. And then this is this, this, this. And then this, and it just goes on. It feels like about a chapter and a half of this stuff. And at some point, she actually says, oh, I wish I had a neural lace. Then this all could just be dumped into my brain in one go rather than someone having to sit down and tell me it all. And I'm like, yeah, me too. As a reader, it would be really nice to have all of this dumped into my brain rather than have to read all of this. But in a way, I do kind of get that as an audiobook. And having read it before, it's like it is already there in my brain. You know, that's what reading is. It's already got in there. And I wasn't skimming through that. It was just, you know, just there in my brain. So that was good.
That was the point. You know, when I was thinking, this book should have been earlier on in our reading list, because of this info dumping, because of this, like, here we get all the background about, you know, all the stuff.
I think the reason why this feels a bit redundant is because we've already picked it all up already from the other books. Except the stuff about the Hells and also the Babulchian. What is it called? The Babulchian thing? There was an alien, the unfallen Babulchian.
The thing that looks like a
Bulbishian, the unfallen Bulbishian.
In German, it's called like it looks like a cake.
Well, the place. Yeah, I thought that was a quite fun diversion where they go over there and then you realize, oh, there are some things which can kick the ass of even a culture.
A culture.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like both.
That was actually quite horrifying.
Which one? Sorry. The Bodivista. The Bodavista, who is traveling, and they, and it gets
and it just gets destroyed.
Yeah, there are things out there which are higher level, much higher level than
and
culture.
You don't even know why.
No,
it's just I don't like ships.
But I like it how like it even drones. It even just said, and I don't even remember. It's like, we killed you, and where are the culture people on there? Oh, they don't exist. Can we speak to them? No, I don't have any memory of them ever being there. It kind of just went, yeah. I'll reset that part of my brain. Yeah. But then that's what happened to Yaim and Soki herself, because she was like, oh, I was invited to take part in special circumstances, but then I turned them down and went over here. But then
it turns out
she also
also got her brain wiped.
Yeah. She actually said, she hadn't known it herself after she had both agreed to be so and then consented to have the memory of that agreement deleted. And it's funny that the person who like smashed her ship also kind of deleted its own memory of ever being involved with the culture as well.
It is like this being innocent.
Yeah.
Or thinking of this is the same thing with the virtual reality.
Yeah.
Thinking of being innocent because of not knowing.
Yeah. Yeah, and
but in the end, not being innocent.
No, of course you're not innocent because you still actually do remember it.
Exactly.
But I really like, there was actually in the Bulbishian, the Unfallen Bulbishian, the guy who keeps going and talking to it and keeps dying, and then keep giving him a new body, and he's like, and they ask, why are you doing this? And the Bulbishian is like, oh no, actually, he gets off on it, and it's like, oh, so you don't need to kill him each time. It's like, no, but he comes back to life anyway, and
yeah,
I really
like
game that
as well.
That,
again,
yeah, it's
like
keeps
playing games.
Totally,
playing games and dying and killing for fun.
Yeah, and coming back. No, yeah, like killing for fun, but also dying for fun. You know, that's what people are doing here. Let me just, what else was I going to say about that bit? No, I can't remember. There is one, Yaskin. Let's talk about Yaskin. He's one of my favorite characters, who is Joy LaVepa's, what? What did you say?
He is your favorite character.
He's one of my favorite characters in the book. He's a minor character. He's the security guard, like the bodyguard of.
Yaskin. I get it. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. He's again Yaskin. Very comparable to what was the book?
Another culture book.
Yeah.
The bodyguard.
The one.
Who are you talking about? Yaskin.
The one what's the book called?
You haven't said anything. You just kept asking what the book's called. You got to actually say something so I can latch on to what you're talking about.
You know, where he has his pageant with him, like the prince. And
the previous book, Matter. We have the
Matter. Yeah.
We have our Bilbo Baggins character.
Exactly. There's
Samwise.
It's just a companion to one of the main characters. And turning out to be one of the,
because he's so much more than that, and you kind of know it at the beginning, just that in the opening scene again, because I knew what was happening at the end in the opening scene where they're chasing down Ledeja, like Yaskin and Joy LaVepa's are chasing her down in this opening chapter of the book, and they go into this opera house, and there's this whole thing going on there. I mean, that it's happening in an opera house is kind of it is a space opera. This whole thing is a space opera, but then you have that kind of like kind of operatic like love story, well, not even love story, but you know, that whole death and that cycling of death. But then with Yaskin, and you actually realize at the end, oh, this has been their secret all along, that Ledeja and Yaskin did have a love affair. But it was but for both of them it was a kind of totally pragmatic affair in a way. It was a totally pragmatic thing.
Yeah, it was from him, from his side, it was just purely just a thing.
But if
Jeppes, at one point he actually said, if Jeppes would have said no, you can't have her, he would have just quit everything with her. So no, I actually was talking about inversions.
What happens in inversions?
You know, with the guy who had with the king and the prince and stuff, and Ulf.
He was the Ulf. Okay, he was the like bodyguard to the king.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, but I'm saying what I like about Yaskin is that there seems to be a tenderness to him, which it goes against, like, his, just the way, just his demeanor. I really enjoy it how, like, at the beginning they're saying, oh, let's say we hurt you in a duel, and the doctor is like, oh, yeah, but then you've got to, you couldn't have not done it anyway. And he's like, oh, well, I'll do it. And it's like, oh, let's do it. And then he says, oh, let's say that. He just goes, in the end, he goes, how about you broke my arm, and then I can wear a cast on my arm, and then I can have some weapons in it there.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh,
and
okay.
And it's better you don't break my arm, because then I can actually...
I can do my job better. And you're like, oh, I like this guy. He's got his head screwed on. But then as it goes through, there's this moment with him and the culture ambassador when Veppers leaves the room, and then Yaskin is still there, and the culture ambassador asks him just a few questions, and the way he answers, especially the way it's performed by Peter Kenny in the audiobook, the way he answers is actually really quite tender and quite, like, respectful. You know,
respectful person,
and just really and that's what I like a competent person who has a history and has motivations which are revealed as the book goes on, and he's just more complex than, I don't know, nothing of a character. It could have just been at various times Veppers has a bodyguard, but it actually becomes more integral to the plot and what he does at the end, and leaves Veppers and goes and, no, he's not going to save pictures because of Veppers. He's going to round up as many people he can find still on the place and get the people out. You know, he's going to save the people rather than
humanity. Isn't that like a connection between... Ledger and Yaskin, that they are actually the only people in there who don't only seem to be loyal to something, but they actually are. There is no second layer.
To who? Yaskin isn't. What do you mean? Who are they loyal to? Yaskin is loyal.
Until the very end.
Yeah.
He is loyal to Jeppers.
Veppers.
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 Which he wouldn't need to be. Because I'm sure that he knew that lots of the thing that he did was wrong. Mm. But he was loyal, and he was not a double agent.
No.
You understand?
Yeah.
And Ledger is also a very straight character. She has no, like... I seem to be that, but I'm actually not this.
No, the only thing that they both were different from was that they had this relationship, they'd had this love affair, and that was the only thing that was hidden from us. Otherwise, they were straight characters, I understand.
Exactly, and they are the only straight characters in that book.
You think?
Yes. Do you have anyone else in that book that is is and does what they say?
Well, I think the only person is Prynne, who is
course. Well, these two guys.
They're small characters. No, but like I say, only one of them, because Che, who stays behind in Hell, she becomes something that she's not, and she has this hidden thing.
She becomes this Hell, this angel of Hell, and does things that she doesn't want to do, but has to. So, it's really just a few people who are actually what they seem to be.
Yes, they are.
And
okay.
These two are then connected as well.
What I really like about this is it actually says, he was instrumental in the wheel Halo 7 being turned into a mobile holiday home for the dependents of bankrupt and destitute. And I think it's funny because people actually say, oh, Halo, the computer game Halo. And there's various Halo games. People actually say, oh, Halo is set on like a culture orbital, you know, the wheel, things like that.
Doesn't it say, about that before?
Yeah, we've mentioned it before. Like Halo people have said, oh, it's inspired by the culture orbitals. And it's actually really funny that at the end of here, which this book was written, of course, after Halo has come out as a computer game. I think it came out in like 2000 or something, so it's a long time afterwards. But I think that's maybe a little joke there. And that when I listened to it this time, I was like, "Oh, Halo! That's really funny that they have a wheel. It's not a culture wheel, but obviously some kind of wheel, and they're turning Halo, which is a computer game where aliens invade and you shoot lots of people, into a mobile holiday home."
Yeah,
I think that's quite funny. Right, let me have a look at some of my other notes. I'm sure I have more notes.
Point out the people that I really that really stood out for me. It were the how are they called?
Ah, this is great listening podcast. This is.
I'm so sorry.
No. I'll keep going.
I should have prepared. I just tried to find out the names of these guys.
Okay, another thing that I didn't like in some points of this is sometimes, like, everybody talks in this, in the culture, everybody talks like Ian M. Banks talks in a way, which isn't too bad. But for example, it's starting to look kind of non-get outable, you know, said one of the things. And I was like, starting to get non-get outable. I was like, does everyone just talk like Ian M. Banks talks, or is it just all ship drones and, you know, ship thing? Like, do all the ships all talk the same? Because they all seem to talk like, especially with the, you know, with the audiobook, it's like they've all got the same kind of accents. It's all like, oh, I do believe, you know, it's like, are all drones, like, do they, is C-3PO their main inspiration for voices and stuff? It's all like, oh no, I don't think so. I don't think we can't do this. So there's quite a few of these times and I'm just like, it would be, you know, like sometimes I want to see a ship drone, which isn't like, no, sorry, a ship mind. I want to see a ship mind that isn't totally cocky and isn't like crazy in some way. But I guess in a way, those are the ships.
Think this is mainly when you listen to
an audiobook.
To the Aussie book. Yeah. For me, this wasn't like that.
Yeah.
In this one.
Yeah.
Because they have so different characters to the other drones and minds they were all a bit more like darker and more like calm to me. Yeah. And so the problem why I couldn't find the people's name, the species names, is because it is just a few letters. GFKF, is that something in English as well?
The GFCF.
Yeah. So are these people, is that the name for the people? I didn't quite get that.
The GFCF is like a group of aliens, like a bit like the culture. They want to be like the culture.
But yes. But they were described as beautiful, etheric people.
Yeah, like elven people. They're like elves, yeah.
And they reminded me so much of the aliens in Star Wars.
The Clone Wars. Yeah, like the angel kind of look.
That made the clone warriors.
But they're super tall.
Yeah, but
In Star Wars, they're really tall. And these.
They're really tall. But otherwise, it is raining there.
Is it?
Yeah.
I don't remember
when
that at all.
When he arrives, he's arriving there, and he's standing under the ship. And it is, So I think that was
what I... Legislator Admiral Betelskroy Bisper Blispin III. that's one of these. And then, of course, in the audiobook, he always talks like this. Oh, and I was pissing myself laughing when I was listening to the audiobook where he's trying to get the location of the hells from Joy of Vepers, and Vepers is like, they're talking on the screen. And he's going like this, and he pauses it and goes... Yaskin, could you step outside a second? I just need to tell them that. It was like, will you fucking get on with it? Tell me. Pause. What? Another pause. Oh, where the hell's that? You know, and it's so funny. And it's like a comedy routine. It's so perfect, the interaction. Yeah.
Yeah. I really enjoyed this little, because also, at the beginning, he was like this really, really very, I don't know, he's so, this character that Jesse just described.
Or Betelskroy, Blispin the Third.
Yes, this guy.
Yeah.
He was also always very correct and very
proper. Yes, I understand. Yes. Yeah.
Very, very proper. And then there is this one point where he just loses it. It's so funny
because he knows he's going up against the culture and he needs to get out of there quickly as well.
Oh, and this guy also, he's losing everything, doesn't he?
But it's so funny what happens to him at the end. It was like he was duly promoted to the Prime Legislator Grand Admiral of the Combined Fleets and presented with several terribly impressive medals. He was put in charge of finding new ways to impress, reassure, and ultimately imitate the culture. Which I think is really good fun. Again, what I like about this book compared to some of these other culture books is that it's not... it's a culture novel, but the players, everything is happening at a human level, you know, for human reasons. And even though the big ships come in, you know, like the falling outside the normal moral constraints comes in and just can kick ass, it all comes down to actually a human level intelligence is in charge, and you realize that even though Vepers is the most important person in his entire in the entire security and enablement, and even though that's a really small, it's a real small bit player, it's actually the humans who hold the key to what's yes. actually happening there. And not yes. just one, it's not just that human, there's a few of them, you know, actually in the, it's restricted, like the ship minds can't fight in the war in heaven, but it does actually come down to these human level intellects which are deciding what's happening. The important stuff is being decided by humans, unlike, say, in Accession, where there's only one human level intelligent that has anything to do with any of the big issue going on, and that was a guy who just happened to be, while he was having sex, look outside and
he just
see
saw
some,
it.
He just saw something and then passed the information on. That was the only human level story, like main overarching plotting going on. Whereas here, it's all that, you know, the falling outside the normal moral constraints becomes kind of just like a weapon that is being used by the different sides, you know, by Bedlzgoy Blispin the Third and by Vatuel or Zakalwi, and, you know, by these other characters who are trying to move stuff in the way. Actually, they're steering the culture. Although it is funny, they say at one point, it's like, oh, when people say don't fuck the culture, sometimes it was us, we did stuff, and then let the culture take credit for it because that's the way that we did. And then they're like, but are you sure it wasn't the culture or special circumstances?
It wasn't the culture,
like,
somewhere in
somewhere in the mix actually making you do what they want. And they're like,
never thought about that.
Didn't think of it that way, yeah. So,
yeah.
Right, let me have a look at another thing here. Oh, yeah, the true place of humans. And that's why I wanted to make a note here. It actually says, oh, we actually work out what the true place of humans are. Even in the culture, they're saying, oh, some humans died. I guess that's bad. We can back them up. But if you hurt a ship mind, that's really important. You know, it seems to be clear quite a few times where the importance it actually says this is what's important, this is what not, that's what not important. But what I like about this book is that it actually tries to play up more of the importance of humans. Do you have any other notes there? You said you were going to look at some notes.
What I saw all the time was that they were talking about backing up minds and having these neural laces. This reminds me still, because I'm still reading the second book of Pandora's Star.
Oh yes,
Judas Unchained. Yes. I'm not reading it. I'm listening to it as an audiobook, which it goes down quite slowly. But I just try to find out when was that one written?
What, Pandora's Star?
Yeah,
I don't know, like maybe 10 years ago.
Anyway, because all these ideas, they are very.
In the air at the time.
2004. Yeah, this is all very close together, that in the future we will have something in our head that lets us have backups of our minds. And then so if you die, well, it's bad.
Yeah.
But you can just get reborn and you get to get another body.
Well, I think the difference is in Pandora's Star, it's like something that's like kind of kept at the back of your brain, which is kind of backing up your brain, whereas the neural lace is kind of, it's got a lot more utility to it. You know, there's a lot more stuff. It isn't just there as a backup device. It's actually there as a communication device and lots more going on.
And in Pandora's Star, they also have the kind of an inbuilt terminal as well.
Yeah.
So they do have this this virtual reality where they have like they can sit there, talk to you, and in the meantime, at the same time, they open mail programs and sending
like there's a terminal in the head that they're
exactly.
Stuff
and
in.
So this is the whole thing, which comes back and back again in these science fiction books. All these ideas of because this comes so often, I actually think this is such a basic idea of science fiction that this would be the next step that we have, is that we don't carry around smartphones anymore, is that we have a thing transplanted in our head.
Well, I just listened to a podcast and it was talking about some guy who's got a cochlear implant. You know, when you do that, and he's got a cochlear implant, but it's a Bluetooth enabled, so he can go around and he doesn't have headphones in, but he can listen to his phone and take phone calls and talk to people like with his.
Oh, normally this is like a medical device. Yes.
Yeah, but the medical device
now. But he uses
now,
it like this.
Yeah, but I'm saying his medical device is Bluetooth enabled. So he's actually got a terminal in his head that can talk to him.
Yes.
And stuff like that, yeah. Which is interesting.
We already have this, yes. There. This is no problem. But let's just wait until everyone has this thing.
Yeah. Right. I was gonna do a search, but I can't look how to. Oh, here's a search. There are some things in this book. Sometimes the language is a little bit I don't know how to say. It is a bit clunky at some points. For example, there was one. Here it is. Let me check it here. And it goes, the disc-built ships have surprisingly escaped the confines of the Song system, possibly powered by an unexpected amount of power no one thought they might possess. And I'm like, possibly powered by an unexpected amount of power. And I've seen this a few times with Ian and Banks. He'll say something and kind of repeat it. And you're like, look, that's not, like, I mean, that's a character saying that, but sometimes the writing is a bit clunky. It's like he's just going for the sound of the words and the sound of, like, rather than actually making some of these sentences make sense, like, possibly powered by an unexpected amount of power. And you're like, okay, powered by power. What are you even saying there? Like, I know all of the culture technology is just pure techno babble, but sometimes I'd like it to be a little bit more rigorous. I don't know. It seems a bit strange.
Yeah, maybe this is like something that very specifically puts to the characters to say.
Yeah, but it's not always. I mean, there are some examples where he does this, and there are. I did also notice a few times where people would flap their hands. You know, when did you notice that? I'm not sure if it's like that in German. And I'm like, oh, you're better than Louis Masterbejold. Don't just give us what the characters' stage directions were. It is better in this book than there. But yeah. there was like three times where someone flapped their hands at someone. And I'm like, okay, in this book it's okay because, like I say, most of the rest of the writing is really top level. But it kind of like stung me a bit. Like, oh, this is my favorite author, and he's doing opening his mouth in a frown kind of style thing. Where you're just like, that's not possible.
There was in the towards the end, there was again a conversation between ships.
Yeah,
like this kind of email.
Oh yeah, email. That's really annoying in the audio books. But thankfully, it was only once. Yes. But,
yeah, it was only once in that book. But then they also always talk with abbreviations.
Yeah.
So you then have to sit there and say, ah. They're talking about that. What could this be?
There's this great section at the beginning. One time where what's the name? I can't remember his fake name now. Vatuel. At the beginning, he's in a space station, and there's people coming in. They're like, "We're on your side." He's like, "Yeah, you said that." Like, "We're on your side." And he's listening in to other people talking, and they've got different voices, and he's identifying the voices. And they're listening to the audiobook quite funny. No, I read that one. No, of course, no, I didn't listen to that as an audiobook. I actually read that part.
Oh, you read that?
Yeah, because I made a note of it here. Let me have a look at a bookmark. Yeah, and at one point he says, oh, BMG. BMG, Galton. And it actually says, he didn't know what BMG, like, Vatuel didn't know what BMG, Galton. It's like, I'll do this one, BMG Galton, and it means be my guest. But it's funny that that's one of the things that the character doesn't know what BMG means. And I'm like, I guess that means be my... Maybe, did I search for that? I can't remember. Maybe I just knew BMG, but I made a note. I was like, be my guest. So it is funny though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I really like, is the, I think this section of the culture where... Yaim is supposed to be in the Quietus.
Yeah,
I really, really like the name.
Why? Because it's meant to make us quiet. Quiet us.
No,
quiet
it is more down. About. No, it's about that if you deal with souls and people who died and stuff. It's just a really nice name. I just really like it.
I just looked it up on define quiet as death or something that causes death, regarded as a release from life. And yeah. You remember the movie Children of Men?
Yes.
And there's the character played by, I don't know, I can't remember who was playing the character now. Anyway, who had the wife that was going to die. And you could, if you wanted to kill yourself, you could take quietus. And that was the name of the drug that people took to kill themselves as quietus, which I thought was
this is quite religious. Good. I mean, of course, it's not really something like he went deep into
quietus,
into Latin or something.
Yeah, it's just there.
It is very obvious, but it is a nice, obvious way of calling this section of the culture this way.
But yeah, there's actually quite a few different sections of the culture which I actually quite like, and we'll get onto them more in the next book, which will be, Hydrogen Sonata, because there's a unit for the sublimed. You know, who are the sublimed? Let's do the sublimed. Yeah. You know, so we'll.
Let me just check. I think this book just came out in German, in the German translation as well.
Hydrogen Sonata. Careful with your microphone. You're bashing the microphone.
Sorry.
Don't worry about it. So I will just, you mentioned this. I listened to this as an audiobook. It's very good. It's one of my favorite culture books to listen to as an audiobook that I've had so far. Peter Kenny is very good at what he does with his narration. So if you enjoyed this, go over and check it out on Audible. And you can get there by going to audibletrial.com/SFBRP. And if you sign up for a trial of Audible, you are helping to support me and Juliana and the Science Fiction Book Review podcast. And you get one book for free and try it out. And if you sign up, if you continue every month, you'll get a book that you can download and listen to. Or like what I do, which is I have a Platinum account, which means I get two books per month. And it only costs me I think it's like $20 or something like that, which is totally worth it. I get through a lot more books than I would do if I had to read them. And it's also just a great way to bring these books to life. Like I say, I was pissing myself laughing at some points. This is really, really good. And of course, if you've already, although this is the discussion, so if you've already read this one, I don't know why you're listening this far into the podcast, but even if you've read this as an ebook like years ago, like I guess it only came out in like 2011, but you know, whatever. If you've already read this as an ebook, it's actually one of those books which is worth reading for a second time. And if you're going to do that, as an audiobook is really great. And also check out some of the other books, the other culture books read by Peter Kenny that you can find on Audible. They are very good. That's what I'm going to say. So go check it out. audibletrial.com/SFBRP. Get yourself a free audiobook and support the Science Fiction Book Review podcast too. That's great. Any other notes that you have there, Juliana? Or should we wrap it up in a bit?
Yeah, let's wrap it up.
Okay, so so far, let's have a look here on the Science Fiction Book Review podcast. I will click on the episode list, then click on rating, and then on author, and then that will probably, if we do it that way around, yes, it then lists all the books that we've had so far. So check it out. Matter, which we're going to do next. I gave 3 stars. No, Matter we did last out, didn't we? I gave it 3 stars the first time I reviewed it, but then with you and me reviewing it, I gave it another 4 stars. We bumped it up there. Consider Flibbers, 3.25 stars. State of the Art, 3.5. Surface Detail, which is this one that I reviewed last time, 4 stars. Hydrogen Sonata, 4 stars. Matter, 4 stars. Use of Weapons, 5 stars and 4.75 stars. Play of the Game, 5 stars. Inversions, 5 stars. So what are you going to give? What are you going to give this book here?
I really would like to give it 4 stars. I think it's a 4-star book.
You think it's a 4-star book?
Yeah, because there are minor things that I didn't quite think was a fluent read.
Yeah, there's that, like I say, that slow section in the middle where it's just info dumping. Yes,
and that's a bit like stumbly, and some of the abbreviations of again are a bit, and then the confusing. Who's this? Who are these species and why, and are they for or against it?
But the point is, at least in this book, at the end, it explains it. Like exactly. In Accession, you're so, like, so who was that piece? And oh, that was actually like a rival. That was actually a rival part of the special circumstances. And who are these? Oh, that was the crazy part of the person who was controlling over there. And it's the same in Inversions. We both loved that book because of that kind of thing. But there was none of the techno babble. But it was the still kind of thing like, oh, so it was that person who did this, and that person. Oh, and you kind of go down into those levels.
But the thing is, with this one, is that in the end, because I wasn't quite sure about it while I was reading it, but because in the end, everything is like set up to a different level and solved in different ways and in very fun ways. And as I say, I just really enjoyed the last sentence about it as well.
Yeah,
it just makes everything like round. It rounds it up and wraps it up so well that I really, really think it's a good 4-star book.
Okay, well that's cool. Good 4-star book. I would get, the thing is, last time I gave it 4 stars. It is one of my favorite culture books. I actually want to give it more, but I think if I give it 4.5 stars, and then we'll average it out. So this can be 4.25 stars for between us. What do you think? Is that good?
Okay. Sounds good.
Is that good? Right then. What else do we have to say? You can email me, luke@juggler.net. I do reply to every email I get, except I'm falling a little bit behind. I have an email here from August the 3rd. Oh, that's quite a few weeks ago now that I need to get onto and to reply to that one. But I do reply to every email. You can also follow me on Twitter. I'm @LukeBurridge on Twitter. All at the moment, all I'm doing is retweeting people who have seen my show and enjoyed it and mentioned it on Twitter. That's all. That's my whole Twitter feed at the moment, and other fringe stuff, Edinburgh Fringe Festival stuff. You can become my friends on Goodreads.com, and also become Juliana's friend on Goodreads.com. You can find us on there. Just search for us. You can join the SFBRP listener group, and we are discussing the culture. There's a whole culture series read through discussion forum or discussion thread, I guess you'd call it, on there on goodreads.com at the SFBRP listener group. And yeah, that's great. What else do I normally say here? I think that's about it, isn't it?
I think that's it. Yeah.
And also, if you want to see any of the books that I've rated, or if you want to recommend a book to me, go to sfbrp.com and click on episode lists. There's a link at the top of every page or on the left-hand side of every page, and you can see all of the books that I've done. You can arrange them by author, by book title, by rating, by episode number, by the length of the episode, and also by how big the file size is of it, for no reason.
Good to know.
For no reason for that, except the data was there and I could express it very easily. So, yes, it turns out that the Edgar Rice Burroughs Tarzan of the Apes episode, 84 megabytes, was the largest episode so far. Hey, let's click it this way. Length.
What did you do there?
What's the length? You can just click at the titles at the top where it says file, and you can click on it. And then the longest podcast that I have here in the feed is George R. Stewart, Earth Abides, 4.5 stars, 1 hour and 53 minutes. But that was actually an SFF audio podcast that we did. Oh, yeah. Next up, we're going to get back to another reading series, or but I think Juliana's going to join me in this one, is that I'm reading through all of the books which have won the Hugula Award, which is the Hugo and Nebula Award, winning them both in the same year. And yesterday, because we're reviewing this on the 18th of August, yesterday, Ancillary Justice won the Nebula Award. So it actually won the Hugo Award, the Hugo Award, Nebula Award, and I think the was it the Arthur C. Clarke Award or something, which is like, those are three of the big awards, and it's the first book that's won all three. So there you go. I don't even have to add that to my reading list of Hugula Award winners. But one book that I read and we did an episode on was Ender's Game. And now Juliana's like, hey, shall I read Speaker for the Dead? And I was like, yes, and if you do, I will also read it. I think I'll listen to it as an audiobook, because I think I've read it twice before as a paperbook. So I'll do it as an ebook this time out. What do you think, Juliana?
It's good. I started it.
Oh, you did? Okay, yes. Well, I will download an audiobook. I will go to audibletrial.com/SFBRP and get my own audiobook. I'll give it a look.
And I found this on the internet, because there's new German version, so there's no ebook.
Yeah, you got a German PDF, didn't you?
I got...
From some Russian site.
I got a German PDF.
Yeah.
Scanned and corrected by some Russians.
Okay.
Which is a fun thing. So this is why I also got, like, because the English ebook, I would have to pay money. So yeah. I just got the sample. So at the beginning, I can compare how good it is.
How are the Russians at correcting German ebooks? Is it good?
Well, I guess so far it was quite good.
Okay, well, let's get to that one. We'll get to that one soon. Maybe we'll have to do that as a Skype. Yeah, sorry if there's any issues with this, if there's any quality, if you could hear Juliana's microphone tapping against her boob.
What?
I don't know. They can't see you on Skype, I can. So anyway, thanks a lot for listening, and we'll catch you next time. Say goodbye, Juliana. You can't just waggle a pencil. They can't see you.
You didn't say it.
Okay.
I should say something.
Say goodbye, Juliana, to all the people listening.
Goodbye, everyone.
Thanks. Okay, that was a good episode, I think. Shorter than doing it in person, although it is a bit weird that we hadn't chatted about it beforehand.
Yeah,
I think
if we chat about
stuff beforehand, what happens is then we know more stuff that we want to talk about was here.
Yes.
Because it was the first time we talked about it at all, we didn't know what we wanted to say, so I think we actually got to less stuff. I don't know.
Yeah.
It didn't work out that way.
I don't know. Also, for me, it's quite a while now since I read it.
Yeah, of course, but Now I can you not hear your microphone? It's zip going up and down the zip there. Do that again. Just move
yeah,
that.
But I didn't sit like this
I
the
know.
Whole time.
You could hear it a little bit. A few times I heard that, but it doesn't matter.
Well, this is just how it goes with technical stuff. Your voice at some point sounded really crickly.
Yeah, but don't worry because the people, because I'm recording at my end, so on my end it'll sound fine. Sometimes your voice sounded a little bit crackly, but it's actually really good. I'm actually really impressed by the speed of the internet here. So how are we going to take our photo? How are we going to do the photo here? Because now we have to take a photo of the two of us. You understand what I'm saying? Like, how do we get a photo? Maybe you've got to take a photo. Mm-hmm. You take a photo of you holding the book, the ebook. Do you have an ebook? You take a photo of you holding the ebook, and then I will put that your photo onto my
to your iPad,
and I will hold it up next to me. But we won't do that now. Just take a photo and then send it over to me, and I'll do it because I need to head out now. Got to go out.
Ah.